This is Curious Minnesota, a Star Tribune project that sends staff from the state's largest newsroom hunting for the answers to great questions we receive from you, our readers. We're here to answer everything you want to know about the state's people, places, and culture.
Welcome to Curious Minnesota. I'm your host, Eric Roper. Today's episode of Curious Minnesota is sponsored by Primrose Schools. And before we begin, I want to alert you to an exciting new feature that we have developed here at Curious Minnesota. We are celebrating the 5th anniversary of the project this month. And now, for the first time, you can read all our stories in one place. You can sort them by category and even see which ones have related podcasts. So check it out at startribune.com/curious. Okay, now for the topic of today's show. Composer and conductor Leonard Bernstein has been in the news lately because of the new biopic about his life, Maestro. But Bernstein's career might have unfolded very differently had he landed a job in Minnesota in the 1940s. Now, some listeners may be wondering, why are we talking about some job a famous person nearly had in Minnesota 80 years ago? And I totally get it. But this turns out to be a deeply personal story about mentorship. And it illustrates how rejection is sometimes the beginning of an exciting new path in life. A reader wanted to know whether it's true that Bernstein was turned down for a job with the Minneapolis Symphony Orchestra, now the Minnesota Orchestra, because of union rules. For the answer, we chat with Jenna Ross, who covers the arts for the Star Tribune. Well, Jenna, thanks so much for joining us today. So just to start, you know, your beat is relevant to this story. So let's talk a little bit about what you do for the paper. You're in the variety section.
That's right.
What do you do?
I cover arts and culture very broadly. Okay. And as part of that, I cover the Minnesota Orchestra often.
Okay. So you're covering classical music. And that's why I thought of you for this cool story, which is also super relevant because the movie came out
recently. Yeah.
Everybody's talking about Leonard Bernstein. And of course, there's a local angle. And it's a good local angle. This isn't just us grasping for local angles here. Listeners, I just am curious, does Jenna's voice sound familiar to you? You can't respond, obviously, but I'm assuming you are either saying yes or no. If you're saying yes, it's because Jenna is the intro and outro voice of Curious Minnesota. We've been waiting 4 years to have Jenna on the podcast. So welcome to
your podcast.
I mean, you're <laughs> you're the voice of this podcast.
Yeah.
So here you are. Welcome.
Thank you.
We sat in the same room 4 years ago recording
and recorded
that. Okay, so I think this story, I was just sort of reflecting on it in the scope of Curious Stories that we've done, and I think it's one of the most personal stories. It's a story about a very passionate friendship, and some of this is because of the things that have survived, like telegrams and things like that. If we had those for other things, maybe they would also be sort of super passionate friendship stories. But this is such a, what did you make of this just in the full scope of what it conveyed? It felt a little different than a typical news story to me.
Absolutely. Because the question was more about like union rules and things like that. But underneath that question, you uncover this very complicated decades long, you know, friendship slash mentorship between these two men.
Right. And we're going to get in a little later to the complexities of this friendship because there's lots of questions around it and sort of what was and the professional, personal, all these types of things. OK, before we do that, Leonard Bernstein, obviously there's a new biopic out about him. Why are we still talking about Leonard Bernstein? Some of our audience members already know, but what is his big achievements that make him still relevant in 2023?
Yeah, I think he was one of the musical sort of giants of the 21st century. He was one of the first famous accomplished American conductors of a major symphony orchestra. He led the New York Philharmonic, and he also wrote the music for West Side Story, as well as other things. He was an accomplished, you know, composer and conductor.
Right. That's how I would most know him, as West Side Story. If anybody's heard West Side Story, that's all mostly Bernstein. I don't know.
Yeah, he did the music and the lyrics for Sondheim.
Oh, okay. Got it. So, all right, this story begins in Massachusetts, not in Minnesota, but it is a Minnesota tale. Why are we beginning in Massachusetts and when are we starting this whole chronology here?
Yeah, it starts in the 1930s when Bernstein was a student at Harvard, because it was then that he met Dmitri Mitropoulos at a party, a campus party. When he was in town, Dmitri was to conduct the Boston Symphony. And he invites Bernstein to a rehearsal. And that rehearsal was like a key moment for young Bernstein.
Yeah, you quote someone in the story describing it as an emotional earthquake. And I was thinking, I don't know if I've had one of those. I mean, I suppose it's a good thing if you, I mean, this is a good emotional earthquake. You could have bad emotional earthquake. Why is this such a big deal? Why is this an emotional earthquake for Bernstein?
Yeah, both musically and emotionally, I think. It was his first time seeing an orchestral conductor conduct up close. And Metropolis was known as a very physical, sort of engaging conductor. So I think that that was really big for Bernstein to see up close. And also, they spent time together beyond the rehearsal one-on-one. And there was clearly sort of an emotional connection between the two men.
Right. And we should just note here, a lot of what we're going to talk about in this story does come from a pretty significant book that was written about Metropolis, right? Do you want to just sort of call that out here?
Absolutely.
That was a pretty core source, right?
Absolutely. I think it's the most detailed recounting of the two men's relationship. It's called Priest of Music, which sort of gets at Metropolis's reverence for music and sort of his monk-like nature.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So back to this interesting emotional earthquake. So first of all, we should note that Metropolis is gay. Bernstein is bisexual. So Bernstein later recounts what happens after their meeting. It's like a fictionalized version of it, essentially.
Yeah, he writes a short story for an English class, but then it ends up being published as one of his later sort of works.
And Trotter, the guy who wrote the Priest of Music book, kind of confirmed a lot of these details.
Yeah, he talked with friends of Bernstein who said, yes, that's pretty much how it happened between Bernstein and Metropolis.
So even though the names are different.
Exactly.
Okay.
So in that story, the protagonist, his name's Carl.
Fevrier.
An important point.
Yeah.
He is a young pianist, just as, you know, Bernstein was at that time. And he meets this star conductor, Eros Mavro. And he describes his wide, full mouth, his strong nose, a disarming gentleness in his small blue eyes. And he talks about how after a rehearsal, after seeing him rehearse, the two of them dine together. And Mavro offers Carl an oyster from his own fork. And he, quote, nearly fainted.
Fevrier.
Yes, Fevrier.
The fictional Bernstein.
Exactly.
That's my favorite detail of the story. I'm just imagining this meeting. And that's why we're going to talk a little later about, like, what is the nature of this relationship. Okay, so Metropolis joins the Minneapolis Symphony Orchestra, which is now the Minnesota Orchestra, really soon after this. Is that right?
Yeah, like a couple weeks after. He is named the new conductor of the Minneapolis Symphony.
And so that would be like a big deal today. You know, anytime there's a new conductor of the Minnesota Orchestra, it's a big deal. But it was sort of even bigger deal back then? Or tell us a little bit about sort of what accompanied that.
Totally. It was a huge deal. You know, it was such a significant cultural institution. And there were all kinds of articles about his being named to that post.
Including in Time Magazine?
Yeah, so Time Magazine came after he had started and talked about how he had brought, quote, brilliant conducting to this, quote, snow-crusted city.
I'm shaking my head here. Come on, Time Magazine. We're more than a snow-crusted city, but anyway. Okay, so he joins the orchestra. There's national attention, but he's still communicating with Bernstein, who has become sort of what, his, like, protege or something like that?
Absolutely, his mentee. They are writing letters back and forth, and then Metropolis sends Bernstein a train ticket to Minneapolis, and the two of them spend the holidays here in the city.
And so we're talking about late 30s, early 40s period there, essentially?
Yeah, this is late 1930s. Apparently, during that visit, they talked about a possible job for Bernstein.
Okay, and so that's really the core of this question, is this job. So what is this job? Because the question was about whether it was an associate conductor job. It sounds like it's a little bit more complicated than that.
Yeah, an associate conductor today would be a very different kind of position. The way that they describe it in Priest of Music is that Bernstein would have played piano parts, he would have attended rehearsals, run errands, you know, that would be a piece of it. So,
but he's still like in college or he's in school?
Absolutely. So it would have been an internship, more
okay.
or less.
Yeah, he's happy to get it. Okay. We'll be right back.
At Primrose, our balanced learning approach means exploring academic skills and life skills, combining purposeful play with nurturing guidance from teachers, and setting children up for success in future classrooms. Learn more at primroseschools.com/twincities.
as soon as this job thing comes up, I mean, I'm sure it was a couple months, but then it kind of disappears. Like, what happened?
So, yeah, in April 1940, Bernstein, who is studying at the Curtis Institute of Music, gets a telegram from Metropolis saying, "Do not leave your class for next session." And he is despairing. He writes a friend saying, "April is the cruelest month. I received a wire from Dimitri that, quote, knocks my world completely to hell."
And it describes there that he's really focused. He had focused intensely on getting this job, essentially. It's not just like a small thing for him.
Totally. He says every move, every note studied, every person loved, every hope ignored was all in direct preparation for next year. From the scores I chose to study to the sexual life, which I have abandoned all.
Whoever saved all of Bernstein's telegrams and things, what an interesting piece of color right here.
I mean, my gosh.
You know, we can sort of relate, right? You're
absolutely
losing that big opportunity. All right, before we get to sort of what's next, I mean, why? Like, what happened?
Yeah, so Metropolis says that it is union rules that forbade him from being able to hire someone who is not from Minnesota for an administrative type of position. As well as the board of directors, apparently, was not too keen on him hiring this very untried student for essentially a big job.
And so, I mean, Metropolis is obviously not from Minnesota. We should just note he's Greek, natively Greek. But when we say these union rules, we're talking about sort of like more staff positions.
Exactly.
Kind of
that would have been the type of job it was. It was more of a staff position.
And I mean, I think about that telegram and we can maybe all relate to sort of missing some big opportunity in our lives and thinking, oh my, this is it, you know, like I've missed my chance. And maybe the sort of moral of this story is that like sometimes that's actually what leads you to your true chance, your true calling. And so 3 years later is actually the first scene of Maestro, right? Which is like this big moment in Bernstein's career, which really launches his career. So tell us about that, because it's just interesting. Maybe this Minnesota thing was really I don't want to say a blessing for him, but I mean, it really did shape his trajectory in a sense.
I think that's true. So he was 25 years old. This is 1943, and he gets the call to come up and conduct the New York Philharmonic
because he's working there?
Exactly. Okay. At that point, he is kind of the position that he would have had in Minnesota, more or less. He's 25 years old. It's 1943. And he is asked to step in for an ailing conductor at the New York Philharmonic. So he runs
in. And he's working at the Philharmonic.
Correct. He's working there at the time in kind of a supporting position. And he has to conduct this ensemble without a single rehearsal. And it is being broadcast on the radio.
Wow.
And he does such a good job that the New York Times writes about it on the front page the next day.
Yeah. I mean, I've never conducted an orchestra before, oddly enough, but I'm imagining it's difficult to just step in randomly without a rehearsal.
Absolutely. So it was a big deal. And he was also young, you know, handsome and an American conductor, which was uncommon at that time. You know,
right.
Conductor positions were often international.
And this is a curveball question, but like you cover this subject. I mean, just talk about the logistics of stepping in to someone's role like that as a conductor. I mean, what makes this so complicated? In other words, like what kind of job is this? I don't know much about conducting.
Well, think about how many musicians are on the stage at a single point. Like it is a huge group of people and you are in charge of keeping them. You know, it's not just about tempo, but like dynamics and other things. It's just like to wrangle a group who you've never sort of stepped in front of before. That's a huge thing.
Okay. So this like launches him to fame. And then eventually he does come back to conduct here in Minneapolis. And this was sort of like, I mean, just to speak of how important the orchestra was at the time. I mean, we were talking earlier about some articles that were mentioned about him coming back.
Yeah. So he
coming here. I don't think they really understood that he was ever here.
I think that's true. So this is in the mid 1940s. He conducts the Minneapolis Symphony twice. And there were stories like about him arriving. And like there's this great photo of him with his suitcase, getting ready to stay with, you know, a member of the board in her Wayzata home. There's another story about him trading like gloves with a cab driver. Like there are big articles in addition to sort of the critical acclaim that also comes from the critics at the time.
Okay. So let's talk about the nature of this relationship, which is going to take us into the sort of end part of the chronology here. So first of all, I mean, you note in the story that there's a lot of debate about the nature of their relationship, which is not just for our prurient interest, but Maestro actually gets deeply into the nature of Bernstein. Rammstein's relationships with different people, both men and women.
Right.
And so talk a little bit about that. I mean, like, what do we know and what do we not know?
Yeah, absolutely. So we know that they were intensely close, and we know that their musical lives were dramatically affected by one another. Biographers have also debated whether or not the two men had a sexual relationship. And, you know, in Priest of Music, that biography, a composer friend named David Diamond actually addresses this head on and says they did not sleep together. And I'll tell you why. Lenny was not Dimitri's type and Dimitri was not Lenny's.
But you note, though, that there is this sort of heavy professional influence that Metropolis has on Bernstein. And part of it is, I mean, we haven't talked about this yet, but like Metropolis has a very unique style of conducting. Like, what is that? Because it's then Bernstein kind of inherits some of that, right?
Yeah, he's really like full bodied on the podium. Muscular is a word that kept coming up as I was reading about him. And so that style, because it was sort of the first thing that Bernstein saw, he in fact says directly over the years, he's been compared to various conductors, but nobody ever realizes how much of it is Dimitri, deep, deep, because it was the first conducting I ever watched carefully and listened to carefully.
Okay, back to that emotional earthquake. When we talk about professional influence, like, what else did Metropolis sort of impart to Bernstein, at least that we can see today?
Well, I think one of the big things is that Bernstein has been known and noted for bringing Mahler into the repertoire. And in fact, the LA Times calls him, quote, the man who invented Mahler. But it was Metropolis who first introduced Lenny to Mahler. So that is a huge piece of their musical relationship.
And then they both end up at the New York Philharmonic in the late 40s.
Yeah, 1949 is when he starts with them. So they both lead the ensemble for a year at a time where Metropolis's conducting is not super popular. Critics have sort of turned against him. Patrons have turned against him. And then there is this young, you know, American conductor who steps up. And by 1957, he is suddenly leading, co-leading the institution with Bernstein.
Okay. And you note in the story that there was some, I don't know if they're rumors or what, that Bernstein was sort of partly behind sort of the movement away from Metropolis as leader of the Philharmonic, or kind of edged his way in there.
Absolutely. That's
true. So the protege becomes the rival.
Exactly.
And you note in the story that Metropolis never conducts any Bernstein music in his career, which it sounds like a small thing, but it actually feels like a large omission.
Absolutely. It was a huge omission given Bernstein's popularity at that time and given how much Metropolis championed new music by new composers.
Okay. So, and then Metropolis passes away while conducting.
Yes, very dramatically. Falls off the podium
and
has a heart attack.
In 1960, and he's 64 years old. And so obviously, like, Minnesota plays this, you know, it's a small part of the timeline here, but it's actually like a significant turning point for these men and their relationship. So did you hear much feedback after the story went out?
We heard back from the person who originally posed the question, who appreciated the research.
Yeah.
And a couple, you know, Minnesota Orchestra fans who had heard about Metropolis through the years really appreciated getting to know him a little bit better in this relationship.
Right.
So
my favorite one was there was a comment on the story from Cattail37, who riffed on a couple of the sort of would-be Bernstein scores had he stayed in Minnesota, one of which being West Side of St. Paul's Story. which someone should produce that. That sounds somewhat funny. I don't know. That joke might get old pretty quickly. But well, Jenna, thanks so much. This is a fascinating story. As I said, sort of just a very personal story because of the stuff that survived, right? I mean, like, we wouldn't know a lot of this had they not kept it.
Yeah, no, it was such a fun opportunity to take what was sort of a technical question and go deeper and learn about these two men.
Yeah, it's a classical music, I say, love affair in a platonic way. We don't know, but I mean, it's a friendship, a passionate friendship.
Absolutely.
And yeah, just, I mean, I don't know, very fascinating. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, that's it for today's show. Thanks, as always, to Matt Gilmer for editing this podcast. Do you have feedback for us or a question you'd like us to answer? Send us a note at curious@startribune.com. And if you're enjoying this show, please tell a friend about it. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Curious Minnesota. We want to hear from you. Ask questions and read more stories online at startribune.com/curious. Our show is recorded at the Star Tribune's headquarters in beautiful downtown Minneapolis, and our music is produced by Matt Gilmer. If you like the show, please rate us on iTunes or leave a review. And until next time, stay curious.